Hi there. Welcome back to the Real Film Chronicles podcast. As always, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Brian.
And in this very exciting episode, we're going to be taking a look at our bottom five of 2023.
Where there's a top, there's got to be a bottom, right?
Without darkness, there can be no light.
That's right. I mean, so we just finished recording our top 10. It should be published online right now, and we'd like to take a look at the bottom five. We won't spend as much time as we have talking about how much, you know, we love the movies in the top 10. We'll quickly go through our bottom five. But just like before, we're going to try to throw some chapters on this. So if you want to skip ahead to some of the movies you're more familiar with, you can check it out on your podcast player. We'll try and stay spoiler-free, although I think historically we played a little fast and loose with some of our bottom-rated movies. There's a lot of good movies we just finished talking about, really positive, and now we have to talk about the other end, the other half. Not the other half.
The yin to our yang.
Yes. Do you want to get it started this time? Do you have anything to say before we get into our bottom five?
Yeah, again, I think, just like we talked about with our top 10, this is, again, a matter of opinion. This is more to show, like, our own personal tastes, what we're looking for in movies, than maybe a commentary overall on filmmaking. Obviously, we've never tried to make a feature film. It's incredibly difficult. People pour their heart and souls into movies. The goal here isn't to put anybody down. It's more just to discuss and provide context. If we're going to talk about what we thought was really well done, I think we have to talk about what wasn't as well done in our own opinions. And again, providing context, Brian and I are not professional film critics. We do not watch as many movies as they do. We just don't have that many hours in the day between our day jobs. So this is based on, you know, the movies that we have seen, which is much more limited than your average, you know, like a full-time film critic. So take everything we're saying with a grain of salt. If you disagree with any of our opinions on this, feel free to turn us off at any time. You don't have to. If you don't like what we're saying about a movie that you really loved, you know what? The great thing is you got a button. You can just literally close the tab and you can go listen to a podcast that talks about your favorite movies. And
that's right.
You can find content that fits you.
And send along your bottom five to us too. realfilmchronicles@outlook.com. We want to hear about
bottom-rated
movies, maybe why you disagree on a film here and there. I know personally I'll probably be a little more hyperbolic than but I normally am when I talk about movies, because honestly it's always this thing. When we set out to do the Real Film Chronicles, it's like we kind of wanted to be positive for the most part. We don't often talk about really awful movies that we both agree are really awful. We try and look for the good parts of movies. Like, again, if you look at my rating spread on Letterboxd, the half-star movie is extraordinarily rare. I have a lot more five-star reviews, but even then I don't give out a ton of five stars, but half-star is even more rare. There's something to love in every movie. What tickles someone's fancy may not tickle mine, and that's why it's on the bottom of this list. It's just didn't get there. And sometimes you got to put a movie on the list because it's going to represent like a genre, or it's going to be the worst of such thing. It's like, we'll talk about for a second, War of the Worlds, The Attack, because I don't think it's on your bottom five.
No, that's a different context, right? It's a bunch of, you know, obviously like filmmakers didn't have a huge budget and they're doing what they love. It's a different context. I'm not going to put that in the same level as, you know, a big budget Hollywood movie that had comparatively infinite resources and still kind of flopped. So that one is like, I'm not going to pile on to, you know, this movie was like, yeah, it's smaller, independent, or, you know, really ultra low budget movie where a bunch of people just getting together and doing what they love. No, like that's fine. I ranked it pretty low, but it's like, it's not, you have to consider the context, 100%.
If anything, this is like the bottom five, like the most disappointed in a movie that I've been, like most disappointing movies, I guess.
Yeah.
Because there are bigger budget movies that probably have higher averages, but they shouldn't be this as bad as they are. And that's why they're on the list.
Yeah, 100%. It's also like, I think, an exercise in the subtle art of, you know, civil you know, just being able to disagree with each other in a civil way, right? So I think part of an exercise for people as well is like, you know what? I can hear criticisms about movies that I like, and or I should be able to hear criticisms about movies that I like without, you know, turtling up and like, you know, well, no, this person's stupid, or like, no, they're wrong. They don't see the genius in this movie. It's like, you know what? I like something that somebody else doesn't like. That's okay. I don't like something that somebody else does like. That's fine. There's no skin off my teeth. And it's a lesson, even at my age, I'm having to kind of reinforce. It's like, it's okay to hear opinions from other people who don't like or like things that you like or don't like. And it's like, you need to expose yourself. In my point of view, from my own personal growth, you need to expose yourself to those different viewpoints and not be afraid to hear those different viewpoints. If your ego is so fragile that you can't have somebody disagree with something about something as, you know, about a movie that you like that they didn't like, I don't know, like, you got bigger problems, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Let's, good disclaimers. Let's, let's get into it here. I'll get started again as I did in the top 10 episode. I might actually alienate some of our younger audience here.
Okay, boomer.
Right. Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay.
Just probably one of the most boring, poor horror movies I saw this year.
Was it PG-13?
Probably. Not a lot happens in it. And I know it's based on a video game series. I'm also a video gamer myself, but I've never played any of these games.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know anything about them. And I think from what I've heard, I mean, obviously this movie's doing really well, like financially at the box office. People who love Five Nights at Freddy's are coming out for this movie, and that's great. You get to see, you know, cameos and stuff. You get to see stuff in the background that makes sense to you. For the rest of us, this was just a garbage horror film that had a nonsensical plot and characters doing dumb things that I just could not jive with at all.
Yeah, the only thing I'm familiar with is the concept. I haven't seen Five Nights at Freddy's, but from what I've heard, if you want a better version of Five Nights at Freddy's, go watch Willy's Wonderland that was released a couple 100%. Years ago starring Nicolas Cage. I think that'll kind of scratch the itch.
Watch that and then go listen to our episode where we talk about and appreciate Willy's Wonderland. What's your fifth worst? What's your number five?
Fifth worst, I'm going to have to go with The Flash.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as people were saying. It wasn't the worst thing ever. And I could see that there were like remnants of that. There could have been there was a decent movie. I won't say good movie, but there was a decent movie buried in there.
Yeah.
But The Flash is just, it was just like one of the last dying breaths of the DCEU. You know, James Gunn is taking over for DC films and they're just going to start fresh. I think it was this and Aquaman. By all accounts, I haven't seen Aquaman 2 yet, but by all accounts, it's much better than The Flash. But The Flash,
it's better than The Flash.
Yeah. The Flash just felt like, and then Blue Beetle was actually pretty solid. But like The Flash just felt like there were a bunch of ideas that they just cut together. They weren't sure what direction they wanted to take. They weren't sure thematically where they wanted to go. The CG was just like, you can do stylized CG and make it, if you're going for a stylized look, that's okay. But this just felt like, oh, we had some ideas. We didn't give the, you know, visual effects companies the time that they needed to actually do what we wanted to see in our vision. And it's just like a lot of the floating head syndrome, that the baby shower scene at the beginning was just like, it was.
The baby shower scene was perhaps one of the most offensive scenes I've seen in cinema.
No offense, like the visual effects people are doing everything they can here, but to put it in context, there's an ongoing current discussion about how they're overworked and underpaid, and the visual effects companies are just like having to bid lower and lower and lower on jobs, and they're just like doing more and more jobs. So all respect, mad props to the visual effects guys, apologies to anybody who had to work on The Flash, but it's like there was clearly not enough time to pull that together. The babies look terrible. The whole sequence was just,
well, it wasn't stupid. It wasn't even just the special effects in that baby scene. It
the whole
was
blocking
just
the scene
itself.
The whole concept.
It was putting the baby in the microwave. I didn't understand. I can't believe that was in a movie of this size in this world.
Yeah. And then this is the thing of why it's not at the very bottom of my list, because there were some poignant scenes later on where Barry was like starting to like, oh, yeah, like, I can't save everybody. Like, the people closest to me sometimes, it's like, there's a, that's why I'm saying there's a decent movie in there about learning to live with loss and how to process grief. But then at the end, they completely undermine that message as well. And so, like, I don't know, man. It's just, they shoehorn Batman and Wonder Woman in there just because we have to, because it's part of the wider universe and we have to do what Marvel's doing. It's like, yeah, it was just overall, it was just like a sad whimper to the end of the DCEU. And then, like, Blue Beetle and Aquaman 2 were forced to kind of limp to the finish line and hold things together. Blue Beetle was okay. Aquaman 2 I haven't seen yet, so I'll reserve judgment. But it's just like, yeah, it's, the Flash was all around an artistic kind of nightmare. It was just, it was a chore to sit through, yeah.
Definitely the worst superhero movie of the year.
Oh, well, I'll say second worst.
Okay.
There's another one on my list.
We're still up in the...
Anyway, what's number four on your list?
Number four for me is Hypnotic, directed by Robert Rodriguez and starring Ben Affleck. I wrote this note for, I only wrote one note. It says, if you want to see Ben Affleck phoning in a performance, watch Hypnotic.
You know what? I'm in the minority that kind of, I'm not going to defend it super well, but like, I kind of enjoyed it. It was a kind of a neat concept. I'm not going to argue. The most, obviously was not on my top 10 or 20 list, but yeah, I was kind of surprised. I'm one of the minority, I guess, who got something out of this. But it sounds like you're part of the masses who just did not like this at all.
Well, again, there were some neat concepts. I just didn't think it pulled together.
Yeah, that's fair.
Into a coherent movie in the end. Like, you can follow this, you can watch this, you can enjoy it. It has a 2.2 average. That's not far off from what I rated it.
Yeah.
I mean, 2 stars isn't like absolute trash. But I was really disappointed that this movie just felt like a contractual obligation. I don't like Robert Rodriguez. I used to love his movies. And when he does this, and I'm like, did somebody force him to make a movie? Did someone force Ben Affleck and Robert Rodriguez to pair up and make a movie? Like, it just, I don't know. It's like, it doesn't seem to have like a proper placement in this world.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I will admit, as somebody who kind of liked the movie, I will admit they wasted the premise of this quite a bit. There was so much to explore with this premise. This could have been like the next Inception or Matrix under different circumstances. Yeah. Just like, it was a really, really cool idea. Or even like the next Scanners. It was like a really, really cool idea.
And that's the thing. I think that's why it's on my list. It was like, there's a lot of promise to it, but it was just the execution.
Wasted promise. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100% agree.
What's your number four?
Numero four is going to get, you're going to hate me for this. It's No One Will Save You.
No One Will Save. Oh, yes, yes.
I know you really love that movie, and I apologize, Brian. I absolutely hated the execution. I thought it was a cool concept. You know, the alien invasion thing, and it was a cool concept with like the, you know, there was nobody spoke except for, you know, it was one key scene where the main character had this emotional kind of breakthrough, and those were the only words in the whole movie. It was kind of cool. Again, it was a cool idea for me, that just the execution kind of fell flat. From my point of view, it was my perspective alone. I know a lot of people love this movie, and, you know, I don't want to quash, specifically because this was kind of like a smaller movie, like a lower budget movie. I don't want to, you know, quash people's excitement about this, or quash the filmmaker's excitement about making more movies. But to me, watching this, like you were saying in some other movies, like the character's decisions didn't make a goddamn lick of sense to me. Everything she was doing, they were running around frantically. The aliens' decisions didn't make a lick of sense to me. Nothing, like, I don't expect aliens and people in horror movies to be completely logical. All I expect is to maintain some kind of internal consistency or internal logic. Pay attention to your own internal rule building. Nothing about it made sense to me. It didn't click with me. I know if you love this movie, I'm happy for you. I'm happy. Anytime anybody can find happiness, I'm happy for that person to find happiness. But this movie, I thought, if you're going to use, like, you know, wasted potential, or the, I don't want to call it garbage, but like, I don't know. It could have used some polish on the script. Like, get somebody in here who knows how to write a script, and this could have been so much better. But yeah,
right. You did insult the script writer of this movie quite a bit.
Yeah, I think it could have used a couple more drafts.
As I recall, we did do a whole full episode on this one, so go back, check it out. It's one of the couple episodes we've done where we have to agree to disagree, but like the gap between it is pretty big. What was it called again?
No One Can Save You.
No One Can Save You? Yeah. It sort of blasted out on the scene. Like, there was a lot of buzz for this movie. People were loving it.
Huge buzz, yeah.
And I think it quickly died off. It was just like maybe the right movie at the right time, hitting like a streaming service. And yeah,
it was great.
It is what it is.
It was a really cool original idea, and it was a great setup. And, you know, maybe I went in with the wrong expectations, but I was just, nothing made sense to me internally. I thought the script was pretty weak, but yeah, that's my number four. What's your number three, Ryan?
Number three for me is The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
Yeah, you very rarely do you message me right after watching a movie, but you specifically went in your way to tell me, you sent me a message to tell me how bad this movie was. That very rarely happens, so I knew it was going to make your list.
Yeah, there's no question. This was just, like, I just want to say it was hot trash from start to finish. But, I mean, I see it has a 2.6 average. I'm probably off the mark on this myself. Part of the Halloween challenge I did, the Hooptober on Letterboxd, was like pretty Dracula focused, I think this year. And I watched a lot of Dracula films, and part of that challenge, I want to put a modern new movie on. I watched this thing, and man, it just pales in comparison to every single other Dracula movie I've ever seen. I called it boring. I made a note here. It was 30 minutes too long. It's 2 hour runtime. Nothing.
Oh, wow.
2 hours. That's maybe the most offensive thing. Know when to cut your movie down, right? Like, when nothing's going on in your movie, maybe bring it down a notch. Make it 90 minutes, and it probably has a much better chance. It probably wouldn't be on this list.
The best part was the end. When it ended, when physically the lights came up and there was no more movie, that was the best part of the movie.
I wrote down, this film needed to cut 30 minutes out of the runtime, then it possibly has a chance of being something coherent. Just stick that on the movie poster.
Stick that in your pipe and smoke it.
Oh, man. And again, it's dark. The whole movie's dark. I think you would have hated it.
Like, visually hard to see, right?
Like, even when, you know, the Dracula monster's out, it's too dark to see anything. So, another notch down for that one. Anyways, what's your number three?
Number three is probably no surprise it's on this list. 65. I think we had a whole mini episode where I was bashing this movie about how
we had a lot of fun talking about this movie. For
nonsensical
sure.
And incoherent it was, but like you're saying, even some of these movies on this list, there's some saving grace. Saving grace in this one was Adam Driver. It's always fun to watch him do stuff. Like, he's a great actor, you know, one of the best of his generation. But overall, like, we covered this ad nauseum, but the movie made no sense at all. There was no internal logic. There were plot points, plot threads that were just introduced and dropped at random. You know, the logic of the movie didn't make any sense. The timing in the movie, you know, what planet he was on and what was going on the planet, you know, strained credibility. And normally, you know, go to an alien world and you're hunting big monsters, and it's like, yeah, complain about logic and stuff. It's like, it's only when it's so glaring and like you keep bringing it to the audience's attention. It's like, oh, this thing here. It's like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you put a spotlight on the one thing in your movie that doesn't make any sense? And then the whole thing unravels. Nothing in the movie made any sense. There was no logic to it. And even the, you know, monster hunting, I don't know. There was no emotional stakes. There was nothing. Even as a popcorn movie distraction, it wasn't great on that mark as well. And like, I don't know.
It was pretty disappointing. Yeah. It's like the biggest like thing it had going for it was revealed in all the trailers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And like, Adam Driver is fantastic. Again,
great.
Maybe
great.
He's like, there's some contractual obligation here to make this movie, but it's like, there you can see how this movie started out with a great concept. It just never came together. A good Sunday afternoon watch if you want to see some decent special effects and dinosaur action, I guess.
Sure. If you want a class on how not to write a screenplay, take 65 would be probably be on the curriculum.
Yeah.
Or how to edit a movie, how to market a movie, pretty much all the things you don't want to do with a movie, 65 would be a perfect case study. Anyway, what's number two for you?
I love doing these bottom five episodes. number two, Heart of Stone. Okay, this is a Netflix movie with Gal Gadot. 124 minutes. I put this on the list because it represents a couple things. It's like the primary motivation of, you know, what they're trying to do is like make sure a super weapon doesn't escape, right? And of course it has to be like some AI super intelligent thing. I've seen way too much of this year. It's in everything. It's driving me crazy. But really what this represents is this middling action movie that never strives to be anything interesting. It strives to get viewers to subscribe to the service for a week, get your $7, $8, $20, watch, you know, the latest star, gal in this case, and then move on. Nothing about the movie is memorable. It's just straight to streaming. It's like it represents the algorithmic movie, right? Where,
right, yeah,
like back in the day, it's like, oh, we're going to make, we know people like this actor, this plot point, we're going to put them all together and make a movie and people like it. But it's feels so superficial. It's like, I know all these things. I like, challenge me with things that I don't know that I like. Bring me some innovation or something. I don't know. So this one definitely took the cake for like produced movie that just didn't get there for me at all. It represents a greater crime against humanity. But that's my number two. What's your number two?
Number two you know how sometimes like somebody will talk or they'll do something and you feel like that secondhand embarrassment to the point where you're physically, all the kids today, like they use the word cringe a lot. Oh, that's so cringe. Yes. That's so cringe. This was a truly cringeworthy experience watching these actors in this movie. I feel bad for everybody involved. It's the comedy, No Hard Feelings. It was god awful. It started with a terrible premise of trying to foster some kind of romantic/sexual relationship with a 30-year-old and a 19-year-old, which if the genders had been reversed, like it just goes to show we've learned nothing over the past 30 years, or the filmmakers have learned nothing over the past 30 years. Stars Jennifer Lawrence. The only reason I gave it any stars at all was only because of Jennifer Lawrence, because of her. She is a talented actor and she was doing her best in there, man. She was doing what she could with the material, but it was probably the least funny comedy I've seen in a couple of years. it just seemed like they were just cutting random scenes together after a while. There was some attempts at some kind of character building. It felt like it was trying to do what Judd Apatow did, or like the Farley brothers. I'm not some kind of prude. It's not the grossest humor or whatever. But it just felt like a pale imitation of what some of these filmmakers had done before. Or what other filmmakers have done rather before. It was just like the premise itself was a shaky foundation to begin with, and then the script, it feels like they cut out like an hour worth of content, because there was like just scenes that made no goddamn sense, and then nothing about it made any sense. And then you had poor Jennifer Lawrence trying to inject something into this role, branching out and doing some comedy. Unfortunately, I don't know, she got roped into, I don't know if she's having discussions with her agent or not, but maybe consider seeing other agents and seeing what they can do for you, because No Hard Feelings was just awful. It was bad all around.
Title, I didn't recognize the movie. I thought this movie I hadn't seen before until you mentioned Jennifer Lawrence. But I looked it up on Letterboxd, and it's like, oh yeah, this movie here that came out. Yeah,
it was like there's like bad, and then like offensively bad. It was like, it seemed like they were going out of their way to insult the audience almost. It was like, oh, you're gonna spend an hour and a half of your life on this. We're gonna make sure that it was a completely wasted hour and a half, that there's no redeeming qualities. It's like, not that it was like, it wasn't offensive, but it was offensively bad, if that makes sense. Right. It was just like, yeah, yeah. Like a complete lack of all kind of basic filmmaking, filmmaking techniques, just basic comedy of like setup and payoff. The basics of comedy weren't there. I don't know. It was just
the basics of comedy.
Comedy fundamentals.
I thought this was a like just purely middle of the road movie, and obviously forgettable because I didn't even recognize it when I heard the title. But yeah, that's like one movie that just came and went. And I'm glad you mentioned Apatow because, you know, his movies were pretty big for quite a while, yeah, in that style of them, and they've seemed to have fallen out of favor. And maybe that is a good example of someone trying to make a movie kind of in that vein and not really succeeding. But at least they didn't make it 2.5 hours long.
Yeah, mercifully it was shorter than that. But yeah, the only reason I gave it any stars at all was because of Jennifer Lawrence. She's a great actor, but she deserves better than this. Please, next year, give her something good to star in to wipe this from our palates. All right, what's your worst movie of the year?
Drum roll for the worst movie of the Let's year that it. I watched. The Outwaters. Okay,
I've heard of this.
So this one, I do feel kind of bad because this is, I believe, a very low budget horror film.
Okay.
By some upcoming promising young talent. I don't know, but this movie did not work for me in the least bit.
Okay.
I was actively angry while watching this movie. it was just bad. It's 110 minutes long. It probably should have been a 60-minute movie. There's kind of two acts to the movie. Like, and to preface, it's a found footage movie, which I do believe can be difficult to pull off properly, right? So it's already at a disadvantage. Budget aside, I mean, we've seen low budget, good found footage movies. We've seen low budget horror movies, but this one seems to be pretty divisive. Like, some people, when I'm looking at the ratings, are 4 or 5 stars and you know, celebrating everything this movie did, but
Brian's here to tell you, you're wrong.
You're all wrong. That's right. It's just, there's the first half of the movie is kind of like, here's all your characters and, you know, they're on vacation, they're doing all this stuff. And then the second half of the movie is literally a black screen, where you get bits of light here and there. When somebody picks up a flashlight, you get a tiny pinhole of light that focuses on something, but is out of focus. Things are moving around. You cannot see anything. Nothing makes sense. What's going on? To the point where, like, I don't know. I wanted to turn the movie off, and that doesn't happen too often. And I'm reaching for my phone. I'm like, no. You have to watch this through. This is probably going to be on the bottom five. You got to watch this whole movie all the way through. It frustrated me to no end. And when I look at its rating spread on Letterboxd, like, it has a 2.4 average, so I'm pretty far off the mark here. But that being said, it's almost a straight line all the way through to like 4 stars. Nobody's giving this movie 4.5 or 5 stars. It's like an even distribution from 0.5 star to 4 stars. Hmm. So it's like, you either like this type of thing or you don't. And in this case, I did. I also saw some comparison to Skinamarink, which I think took the horror world by storm. And it was also kind of a similar thing where it's a fairly long movie. Nothing really happens on screen, but I enjoyed Skinamarink because I knew they were going for something.
Yeah.
And at least I could see stuff and make my own interpretations and discussions with my friends after watching it. This thing, I don't know. I wasn't pulling anything out of it at all. It was just straight out bad. I'm exhausted just thinking about it right now. All that being said, I didn't even give it 0.5 star. It's a 1 star. It's just, I'm afraid to pull that half star trigger. Anyways, what is your number one? We got a drum roll insert here.
All right.
Number one for Nathan. Worst movie.
I don't know. Maybe this is an easy target, but I think Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Which I didn't realize, like, it felt like so long ago, but that did come out in 2023. I think it just goes to show the failure of blockbuster movie making, or the failures of, you know, the MCU, you know, kind of writ large on the screen. Everything wrong with blockbusters, everything wrong with the MCU. You know, the over-reliance on CG. Like, it's one thing to have them in, have your characters in far out worlds. But like when everyone's just like, everything is, all the lighting is so flat, all the images are so flat, the characters have nothing to interact with. I don't even know if they're interacting with each other, because like they could be on just different sets that are kind of stitched together. None of the internal logic made sense, none of the writing made sense, none of the character decisions made any sense. You know, the reason I'm putting this kind of below stuff like, you know, No One Will Save You or No Hard Feelings, is because by comparison to those movies, Ant-Man and the Wasp, effectively, the MCU effectively has infinite resources compared to those movies. There's no excuse, right, why they're pumping out this kind of garbage. It's garbage. It's like, I go into this, I'm not expecting Citizen Kane. You know, I'm going in this with, I think, the correct expectations, a big budget action movie, and it's just like visually on screen is a bunch of it's messy. They don't follow their own rules. Like, again, why am I thinking about the logic of, can you take your helmet off when you're like giant or when you're shrunk down? Only because they keep mentioning that you can't take your helmet off, and then they keep doing it. Yeah. And then what does being giant even mean when you're in a universe that is already mini, that's already like microcosmic? What is it? What is like, why would you? And then like none of the comedy lands. You know, Bill Murray shows up and you waste Bill Murray on some kind of stupid throwaway gags. I mean, the actors are doing their best, but it's just,
it kind of represents like how far the MCU has fallen.
Yeah.
Like in every regard, like it does everything the superhero movies should not be doing. It was just bad.
It's a lackluster attempt to establish Kang as the new kind of villain, like they did with Thanos, fails miserably. It just feels like, it feels almost insulting in the fact that he's like, oh, we can just put out whatever we want. We don't have to worry about characters or plots or even, you know, properly lit sets or filming. You know, we can put whatever they want behind the characters afterwards. They don't even know what they're acting against.
Yeah.
You know, and people are still going to go out and make this like a $500 or $600 or $800 million movie and give us their money no matter what now. It just feels insulting as an audience member. It was like, we're just going to put a bunch of crap on the screen and we don't care because you're going to give us your money anyway, because this thing is just so much bigger than it's got momentum of its own now. It's like, well, we need to see the next episode in this cinematic TV show. And it just feels, it feels like a slap in the face to audience members. And that's why it's like, all these other movies, even The Flash, I felt had more saving qualities than Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. And that says something, because The Flash was already a mess. But at least in The Flash, I could see, I was like, okay, there's a core of a theme that there's a kernel of hope. Like, they could have talked about like dealing with grief and dealing with loss, and that idea of like, oh, we can't always save everybody. That's a powerful theme. And it is a kernel of that in The Flash. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I don't know what the hell. There's no kernel of any kind of idea in there at all. Don't be a dick, I guess, is like, that's your message. I mean, talk about like insufferable child characters. Like that daughter was insufferable. Oh, I could not stand her at all. She was like, and just like the whole thing is like,
you're gonna have to get used to her, because she'll probably be like replacing.
I don't mind the actor.
She'll be the Ant-Man
character. But like the way they wrote her in there, and like, it's supposed to be like Ant-Man's supposed to be the hero, and they keep putting him down, and like, oh, you can't. It's like, oh, you're useless, and you keep bumbling into stuff, and you know, your daughter's better at stuff, and the Wasp is better at stuff. Why make a movie about a character you think is an idiot? I don't know. Why have him be your main character at all? Why not just have the Wasp movie then, if you think she's a better character, which is completely valid. But like, they kept making him like, okay, so he's bumbling into this, he's bumbling into that. Why is he the main character? I don't understand. I don't understand unless they're trying to make fun of Ant-Man. I don't know.
So here's the most offensive part of Quantumania. One of the most endearing aspects, parts of the first two Ant-Man movies is Michael Peña's character.
Yes.
And how he would excitedly run through, like, summarizing, like, this montage, like, story.
Yeah.
Right? And you're waiting. He's not even in this movie to begin with, which is a huge, like, problem.
Yeah.
And we don't get his story because of that. That was, like, a cornerstone of each of the Ant-Man movies. This is what made it a true comedy. This was not a comedy like the previous Ant-Man movies were. It was trash.
And then to make the blast fight, it's like, no, Ant-Man always wins by you. Like, he's using his, you know, his thinking ahead, or he's like using his powers. And it's like, he's not like a physical guy like Thor or Hulk. But in this one is like, what do they do for the final battle? It's like a fist fight without his powers.
Which is also offensive because Kang is being brought in as one of the most powerful, like beings out there, level and Ant-Man's able to beat one of them.
And Thanos beat the crap out of Hulk barehand without even all the Infinity Stones. We're geeking out here a little bit, but then but Kang, and he can't fight off Ant-Man without the Ant powers. He's regular man. He's just a dude. Yeah. He's just Paul Rudd. Which Paul Rudd is awesome, but Paul Rudd versus Kang. Kang's gonna win. I don't know.
And they had some good talent, like Michelle Pfeiffer, Michael Douglas. Sure. Like, man, what a wasted. Yeah, definitely. I don't think I've rated it that low, but what a disappointing movie.
Yeah, like, other movies on here I think I've rated lower, but this one, just because you have that many the resource versus outcome measurement. I'm not saying every movie that has, you know, $100 million to spend is going to be the best of the best, but it's like, you're spending $100 million and you can't get a decent looking, you know, CGI background. Like, you can't get decent lighting so that everything doesn't look like super flat and boring. You can't get decent, like, I don't understand. You can't get decent costumes. Like, my mind is like, I'm struggling to understand. Is like, you have, you know, compared to these indie filmmakers, essentially infinite resources, and still this is the trash you put out. So that's why, even though I may have, like, the star ratings may not align with this list, but like, it just feels like a slap in the face from Marvel. It's like, we could just like put out literally a shot of Tony Stark just on the toilet for 2 hours straight, and we're still going to make $800,000 or $800 million. You know, it's just like, it's like almost an insult to, if you're a fan of the MCU, it's like Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania just feels like a huge insult from Kevin Feige. You know, just and his crew is just like, oh yeah, you're going to watch whatever we put out. You're going to eat. We fed you steak and now we're feeding you garbage, and you're going to pay the same amount for both. I was like, okay, I guess we are. I guess you're correct.
Yeah. Well, we should keep moving here.
But you got some honorable mentions there, or dishonorable mentions?
I'll just throw out a couple honorable mentions of like movies that were poor, but almost made the list. I know we'll disagree on this one, but The Black Demon.
No, I thought it was middle of the road. So like, I'm not going to defend it.
Yeah. And, you know, we did do a full episode on that. So take a listen, watch the movie, take a listen. Quasi, which I think we were going to talk about on an episode, but it just didn't really come to fruition. This was like a return of the Broken Lizard comedy group, who kind of like crowdfunded the sequel to Super Troopers 2. And after that did well, they get to do Quasi. And it was just...
Yeah, no, that's fair.
It was just not good. And then The Nun 2. And I love the Conjuring universe. The Conjuring movies are fine, are good. The first two are fine. No, the first two are good. Last one, number three, was kind of bad. As I recall, we watched that one together. Yeah. The Nun was a bad movie. This Nun 2 was also bad, but it makes huge dollars. Maybe I'm just not watching it properly or something. I'm not seeing what others are seeing in it, but it is kind of what it is. And the last one I'll throw out there, again, this one probably doesn't deserve to be on here. It's The Flood. It is a very, very low budget, kind of ambitious movie about killer crocodiles or alligators. Casper Van Dien is in here.
Really?
Like, it is a D movie through and through. It is fun to watch, but like, the effects are bad. The story is bad. The characters are bad. Like, everything about it doesn't really work, but it actually, the sum of its parts are better as an overall film, especially if you're going into a movie knowing it's going to be like, have this like Asylum level kind of production, right? So it didn't feel fair to throw it on the bottom five list. But those were sort of the worst ones that I put together.
Some other offenders, I think we talked about this in our pre-show show, but like Napoleon wasn't on the bottom five exactly, but it was, that was pretty rough. I'm always kind of...
What did you give Napoleon?
I think I gave it like 2 stars out of 5.
2 stars? Okay. I gave it 3 stars. I ended up 3. I didn't think it was...
I thought it was... like 2 stars seems still a little bit high. So like that's why I'm just like... A rare miss by Ridley Scott, in my opinion. But for once, like I'm always kind of leery of any critical reception. If it's like all positive or all negative, I'm like, okay, well, there's some... Sometimes it feels like we're dogpiling in some cases... It was hugely disappointing. Another one that kind of disappointed me was The Royal Hotel. It was a bit smaller movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It had an interesting premise. It looked to be like it was going to discuss some interesting, like discussing some topics through a feminist lens about like power dynamics between men and women, and it just kind of... I don't know. The movie fell really, really flat. It felt like it didn't know where it wanted to go with these discussions.
It got pretty generic by the end, like the whole thing.
Yeah, the only saving grace for me was, I can't remember the actor's name. She was in the Daredevil, no, Iron Fist series. And then she was in Matrix Resurrections. Oh, what's the actor's name? She's martial arts. She's usually doing martial arts stuff. I'll have to look it up later, but... Oh, Jessica Henwick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She was really good in that, but she wasn't given a whole lot to do. Yeah, I think those were the ones that really... There's another God is a Bullet. Isn't the kind of a smaller movie, but it was just like, eh. Had an interesting premise based, I think, roughly or loosely around a true story, but how true that actually is, I don't know. It did not inspire me like Oppenheimer did to go out and actually look up the true story. Those were a couple more that more disappointing than anything else. I mean, Shazam Fury of the Gods, it wasn't that bad, I guess. Not enough to make my bottom five. It was disappointing more than anything else. Yeah, I think that's it.
No, that's pretty fair list right there. Every year, you know, you have your top quality movies and you have something's got to be at the back. Someone's got to lose. And those were kind of like the losers of this year. I always have fun going through those lists.
Yeah. And again, you know, if you have, if you like some of those movies that, that we didn't like, you know, feel free to drop us a line or leave a comment. It's all subjective, I guess. Right. It's, except with Napoleon.
It was still,
but everything else is subjective.
You're asking for fights right there, I think. Honestly, I don't know. Napoleon, I think, is like a solid 3 average for folks right now. But
yeah, I don't think we're that far off from Napoleon. Like, if we had to come to a consensus on a rating, it's like I'm not going to fight either way. The thing about Napoleon, I just don't care about it that much, right? It's like this is the worst. That's the most indicting thing is I don't care either way that much.
Yeah, I mean, right there, it's like it's Ridley Scott. You want something bigger and better.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of hype going into that film, but it is what it is. Yeah. It's still a great journey.
Yeah, no, this is the thing. If to say every movie is great means no movie is great, so you need to have that contrast. You need to have things that you like and you don't like. You need to have things that are higher quality and lower quality, or else high quality doesn't mean anything if there's no low quality, right? So it's, you know, it's all part of that journey, part of that film journey that we're all on. So, you know, it's not not to hate on people or not to put people down. This is all, you know, as we said, purely our opinions. So if you like some of these movies, more power to you. If you didn't like these movies that we didn't like, then welcome to the right side of history.
Oh, goodness. And that's a wrap on another episode. As always, we appreciate you hanging out with us today and taking the time to listen to our podcast. We have a lot of fun putting these together and hope that you get some enjoyment out of them as well. You can find us online over at realfilmchronicles.com, where we have not just a repository of podcast episodes, but many of our written reviews as well. If you're up to it, You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram as well. All the links should be within the show notes here. So until next time, take care of yourself and others, and be sure to enjoy your film journey.